Britain, Australia, Canada, and others, is happening only because of the steadfastness and resilience and resistance of the Palestinian people, because of the heroism of ordinary Palestinian citizens who refused to leave their country and who risked everything to stay in Palestine. And it's also because of the heroism of so many people in these countries, the people of France, the people of Britain, the people of Canada, the people of Australia, and the people of the United States, by the way, who are standing up against injustice and standing up in support of Palestine.
Dr. Baghouti, I wanted to get your response in this final minute to Israel's far-right minister, Bezalel Smotrich, calling the Gaza Strip a real estate bonanza, saying a business plan is on President Trump's table. He's added, we've done the demolition phase. Now we need to build. And of course, this reinforces what President Trump has said. He says the U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip and will do a job with it, too. We'll own it. We have 30 seconds on what especially responsibility the U.S. has.
What you say is a reflection of things that can only be said by fascists and by fascism. What the United States must do is to stop this terrible, horrible fascist tendency. Listen to the American people. The American people are changing, and they would not let this administration continue what they are doing.
Dr. Mustafa, you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Coming this Monday at 2 p.m., the Monday Sampler presents part three of Ian Fleming's Goldfinger.
They've all gone, Mr. Bond. I will tell you the truth, because you'll have no opportunity of passing it on. By midnight on D-1, the entire population of Fort Knox will not be sleeping. They will be dead.
Toby Stevens stars as Lieutenant Commander James Bond and Sir Ian McKellen as Elric Goldfinger.
You're not going to get 100 tons of gold out of that place anyway. Where the hell would you hide it?
Mr. Bond, it just happens that a Soviet cruiser sails from Norfolk, Virginia on D-1. I shall sail for Kronstadt, Russia, taking the golden heart of America with me.
So tune in this Monday, September 22nd at 2 p.m. as the Monday Sampler presents Ian Fleming's Goldfinger. Right here on Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. Today is Monday, September 22nd, 2025, and you are listening to KBOO FM Radio, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. I am Cecil Prescott, and you are listening to More Talk Radio. Thank you all so much for listening and for being a part of this community, this enterprise, this place of resistance. So thank you all for joining us and for being a part of our community. Phone numbers, this is a opportunity for listeners to call in and participate and share their thoughts and comments. If you feel so moved as we continue our program, give us a call and share your thoughts. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187 to call in and to share your thoughts and your comments about this program and about all that's going on. I want to thank all of you first for all of you who participated in our fall fundraising effort, and want to encourage those of you who have not. Hey, you can still donate, I am sure. Go to KBOOFM and donate. Appreciate it much. Those of you who are able to participate at the annual meeting, thank you all for coming out, and for all those who were elected for the board We thank you for your ability to be willing to be a part of this effort to maintain integrity, democracy, and free speech, which is, as we all are aware of, is under attack in this country. I think it's interesting that so many members of a certain political persuasion talk a lot about their Second Amendment rights, but somehow First Amendment is oftentimes not on their tongues, especially when it's speech of those who differ. You are all aware of the move to stifle speech here in this country, not only deliberate government censorship, but pressure on institutions, on TV and radio stations, pressure on newspapers and newsprint and media enterprises to stifle free speech and to only say that which is approved by the administration. And for those of you who thought, oh no, this is the United States, we are, unquote, a free nation, hopefully, we are becoming aware of the crisis that we are living in and that we have to do something to respond to the situation we are in. So I want to share a little bit about some of my thoughts about what's going on, and I want to hear some of your thoughts about where we are and where do we go. One thing I would like to pose to you and hear your response is, how do we, in this divided nation, heal ourselves? How is it possible for the divisions, political divisions, in this country to be resolved? Certainly there have been examples of political divisions throughout this nation's history, from the very beginning of the European invasion in this on this land, and the political divisions that happened as the settlers tried to assert their authority, and as they later tried to successfully free themselves from Great Britain. But where do we go? How do we heal? Examples. Certainly there's been examples of division in the United States, not only with the Revolutionary War, but certainly division throughout the United States history, probably culminated most dramatically in the Civil War, where there was a division in the state, and it ended in war, a political division. And certainly, after several years, the United States, the war ended, and the Union came back together and was preserved. But what did it cause? Certainly, we have examples in other parts of the world where countries are divided by war and attempt to rebuild, to reunite. We can look at, from post-war Germany to South Africa to later the collapse of the Soviet Union. What seemed at one point as divisions that could not be overcome, they managed to at least move forward. So a question I have for you, how do we or can we as a nation heal or resolve the political divisions in our country. We certainly hear that in many, many ways, and certainly since the recent election of the president and the move to clamp down on any attempt to speak out against is something that we are aware of and that we are in crisis. And so where do we go from here? And I want to share something from 1845 that I think is appropriate. Now, some of us, some of you might have had the opportunity to observe the funeral of someone who was slain yesterday, where all sorts of people gathered and wrapped in a lot of it in religious pomp and show. And so I want to read something from Frederick Douglass from 1845. He wrote in his autobiography, and in his appendix, he after reading over what he wrote, and in it, Frederick Douglass was someone who ran away from being enslaved, became an advocate for the freedom of those who were enslaved, and became a human rights activist from the middle of the 19th century until his death, advocating not only for the rights of enslaved Africans, but also for others, for women's rights and others. But in 1845, understand that this was a time in the United States, which this is 15 years before the beginning of the Civil War, and there seemed as if there was no possibility for what would happen, because it seemed as if slavery was there forever and there was nothing to do. And what's more, it had the approval of religion. So an evil practice was anointed by religion. So Frederick Douglass wrote his autobiography talking about his escape from slavery and what it meant. And reading over what he wrote, he saw that he wanted to clarify something, and that's his thoughts on religions. And he writes in his appendix, what I have said respecting and against religion, I mean strictly to apply to the slaveholding religion of this land, and with no possible reference to Christianity proper. For between the Christianity of this land, he's speaking of the United States, and the Christianity of Christ, I recognize the widest possible difference, so wide that to receive the one as good and pure and holy is of necessity to reject the other as bad, corrupt, and wicked. To be the friend of the one is of necessity to be the enemy of the other. I love the pure, peaceable, and impartial Christianity of Christ. I therefore hate the corrupt, slave-holding, women-whipping, cradle-plundering, partial, and hypocritical Christianity of this land. Indeed, I can see no reason but the most deceitful one for calling the religion of this land Christianity. I look upon it as the climax of all misnomers, the boldest of all frauds, the grossest of all libels. Never was there a clearer case of stealing the livery of the court of heaven to serve the devil in. I am filled with unutterable loathing when I contemplate the religious pomp and show, together with the horrible inconsistency which everywhere surrounds me. We have men stealers of for ministers, women whippers for missionaries, and cradle plunderers for church members. The man who wields the blood-clotted cowskin during the week fills the pulpit on Sunday and claims to be a minister of the meek and lowly Jesus. The man who robs me of my earnings at the end of each week meets me with a class leader as a class leader on a Sunday morning to show me the way of life and the path of salvation. He who sells my sister for purposes of prostitution stands forth as the pious advocate of purity. He who proclaims it is a religious duty to read the Bible denies me the right of learning to read the name of God who made me. He who is the religious advocate of marriage robs whole millions of its sacred influence and leaves them to the ravages of wholesale pollution. The warm defender of the sacredness of the family relations is the same that scatters whole family, sundering husbands and wives, parents and children, sisters and brothers, leaving the hut vacant and the hearth desolate. We see the thief preaching against theft and the adulterer against adultery. We have men sold to build churches, women sold to support the gospel, and babes sold to purchase Bibles for the poor heathen, all for the glory of God and the good of souls. The slaves' auctioner's bell and the church-going bell chime in with each other, and the bitter cries of the heartbroken slaves are drowned in the religious shouts of his pious master. Revivals of religion and revivals in the slave trade go hand in hand together. The slave prison and the church stands near each other. The clanking of fetters and the rattling of chains in the prison and the pious psalms and solemn prayers of the church may be heard at the same time. The dealers in the bodies and souls of men erect their stands in the presence of the pulpit, and they mutually help each other. The dealer gives his blood-stained gold to support the pulpit, and the pulpit in return covers his infernal business with the garb of Christianity. Here we have religion and robbery, the allies of each other, devils dressed in angel robes, and hell presented the semblance of paradise. Frederick Douglass continues in talking about the contrast in between what is portrayed as the Christianity of America and what he considers the true Christianity, and contrasting what he sees evident from in this land with his understanding of the pure sense of religion. And that contrast, my friends, if I may call you that, is truly evident here in the United States, continue today, where under the cloak of religion we have people continuing what has continued for centuries, using religion to denigrate, to persecute, to hurt people. And so, my friends, where do we go from here? So how do we hear? How do we contrast? And I want to share another article which also affirms and assert the contrast between what is often garbed as religious and what is not. What we heard was from Frederick Douglass in 1845. I want to, before going to our caller, I want to also read something from 2025 and just contrast it with something 180 years ago. It's an article from Jamal Tisby. And he writes, "The Sunday after Charlie Kirk's murder, many people wonder what they would hear from pulpits on Sunday. Would preachers be silent or would they speak with clarity? The black church did what it has always done, told the truth. The black church is still here, still central, still interpreting our chaos with the spirit of justice. Kirk's Love and Death reveals America's fault line between faith and politics, racism and justice, memory and myth. And once again, black pastors gave us the moral clarity we desperately needed. Social media has plenty to say about Kirk's life and legacy. Some people insisted he was a Christian apologist who was outspoken about his faith and willing to go anywhere and debate anyone with boldness and intelligence. Others saw him as a young man who built a brand on divisiveness and touted racist belief loudly and proudly. Countless posts and comments stoked the conversation to a fever until Sunday finally arrived. What would church leaders say about this man who loudly proclaimed his Christian religion while also saying, if I'm dealing with somebody in customer service who's a moronic black woman, I wonder, is she there because of her excellence or is she there because of affirmative action? Debate raged online, but in the pulpit, some black preachers spoke with undeniable clarity. Pastor John Howard Wesley of Alfred Street Baptist Church in Alexandria, Virginia, said he was overwhelmed with the hypocrisy. He said, I am overwhelmed, and I do not celebrate the killing of anyone. Charlie Kirk did not deserve to be assassinated, but I'm overwhelmed seeing the flags of the United States of America at a half-staff, calling this nation to honor and venerate a man who was unapologetically racist and spent all of his life sowing seeds of division into this land. Reverend Dr. Wesley made it plain, I am sorry, but there's nowhere in the Bible where we are to honor evil. And how you die does not redeem how you live. You do not become a hero in your death when you are a weapon of the enemy in your life. Dr. Freddie Haynes III of Friendship West Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas, drew a hard line. Kirk's words were racist, but political violence is never the answer. Don't compare Kirk to King, he said. Let me hasten to say, I'm an anti-political violent. Kirk should still be alive. I don't agree with anything Kirk said. What Kirk said was dangerous. What he said was racist, rooted in white supremacy, nasty and hate-filled. But he should still be alive. And Pastor Jamal Bryan, who has been a vocal advocate of boycotting Target for his rollback of DEI initiatives, rebuked fellow black pastors who compared Charlie Kirk to Martin Luther King. Pastor Jamal Bryan says, I'm concerned about all these Negro preachers who's been, in fact, talking about that this man who was killed was the answer to Christ in the earth. They having moments of silence in black churches all over the country over a man who was racist and a white supremacist. How dare you compare him to Martin Luther King? The only thing they got in common is both of them were killed by a white man. After that, they got nothing else in common. And Dr. Tisby concludes his column by writing, the sermons from Wesley, Haynes, and Bryan are just three examples, but they represent something bigger. Black church is still here speaking truth when others equivocate, naming racism when others excuse it, and calling this nation to a higher moral ground. If you want to understand American present chaos, don't just watch the news or scroll your feed. Listen to the black pulpit. It has been guiding us through storms for centuries, and it is still speaking today. That was Dr. Jamal Tisby, and you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. I've been speaking, so let's hear some words from our caller. Good morning, caller. How are you this morning?
Doing all right, Cecil. How you doing, brother?
I'm well. What do you have for us today?
Well, I think what a lot of people don't recognize, you know, is that, Charlie Kirk, being a white man, he didn't expect to be killed for what he was saying. And I think all of us, black and brown folks, queer and trans folks, ultimately know that simply our existence is seen as a threat. Even if we absolutely mean no harm to anyone, that just being nearby is cause for alarm for most, for at least, you know, for most, most white folks. So, you know, like even Dr. King understood that, you know, the cross you carry is the cross you die on, you know. But that being said, like, while I don't necessarily celebrate what happens at Charlie Kirk, I look upon the words of Malcolm X, who said that I'm never saddened when the chickens come home to roost. I mean, ultimately, Charlie Kirk was a part of creating the environment that got him killed. He said that a few gun deaths each year is worth it to protect the Second Amendment, but he said that foolishly believing that he would never be the person caught at the end of the gun.
Right. And I think you made a very very good point when you contrasted how people who have been marginalized by the society walk around and are surrounded by death and destruction. And quite frankly, the only thing I heard someone said that Charlie Kirk and people like King and Malcolm X have in common is that they were not Malcolm X, but King and Kirk. The only thing they have in common is that they were killed by white men. That continues. But let me ask you. I don't want to cut you off, but I want your viewpoint. This political division, is there a possibility of healing, and how do we get beyond that? Are we in another civil war?
Well, the Civil War never ended. The Civil War The Civil War just got moved out of sight. You know, you know, we might have gotten rid of Jim Crow, but you know, redlining still exists. You know, I mean, we're talking about the outward appearance of a Civil War, but we've emphasized the civility. Mm-hmm. You know, and even the civility of people having to say that, you know, Charlie Kirk should still be alive. I mean, no, Martin Luther King should still be alive. Malcolm X should still be alive. You know, so many of our civil rights leaders who were on the correct side of history should still be alive.
Many people today who are being killed, who are being kidnapped, should still be alive. Yeah.
Absolutely, but I think we can heal it, but it has to come first. The quickest way to get on the path of healing people is to start addressing their material needs, because ultimately, because both parties are paid by corporations that are driven by the desire to get greater and greater profits, it behooves them to not have our material needs addressed. And that's whether you're talking about a bunch of white racists or a bunch of black and brown liberationists. I mean, I think black and brown liberation is still necessary, regardless of whether or not our material needs are met. But if we want to start tamping down on it, they have to be addressed immediately.
You mentioned the fact that, you know, both political parties are, you know, they're owned by you know, major corporations. How do we get beyond that? How do we begin that, addressing the material needs of the people that you think we ought to do?
Well, what we got to do is we got to start creating workers' parties. I'm in the process of starting a workers' party here in Oregon. They have one in Massachusetts that I've been talking to. And essentially, it's a party that is based strictly upon meeting the needs of the working class. And that means to the detriment of the people who have money. Because right now, the closest we have is Working Families Party. But the Working Families Party is slightly left of the Democratic Party, but ultimately an appendage of the Democratic Party. And we need political parties that are going to advocate for our rights that are not connected to the two corporate parties.
Okay.
You know, and it's based around principles of socialism, communism, talking about the Workers' Party based around the principles of socialism and communism, where we're talking about, you know, labor's power. We're talking about the need to control our own means of production, and ultimately with the, you know, and ultimately taking the power from those who have it. You know, the the Democrats are on the tax the rich, which is good. They should have, they should be taxed. But ultimately, as long as they continue to hang on to their wealth, even if it takes them 80 years, as in the, as in what we've seen now, they will eventually take back their power, because we, because as long as we are not, as long as neither of the parties that that are that we're supposed to be a part of, the Republicans or the Democrats, as long as they are not fundamentally anti-capitalist, this will keep happening.
Okay.
So if we want to heal those divisions, you know, we have to get beyond, we have to get beyond capitalism, because ultimately it is capitalism that is the basis for white supremacy and the basis for the detriment and the basis for the harm that is not just going on in poor white communities, which are weaponized by people like Charlie Kirk, but also the the harm that goes on every day in oppressed and marginalized communities that we see, that we've been seeing for, you know, for decades, if not centuries.
Hey,
and
yeah,
go ahead.
No, I just want to commend you and thank you for addressing, you know, how you are resisting, and you say a way to do that is what you're doing is organizing a working party,
workers party, where we're not working families, something probably party. More akin to the labor party, like what they have in Europe, and something that Shama Sawant used, that she used as a vehicle to get elected in Seattle, where we're strictly talking about the needs of the workers, because ultimately we are the ones who are creating the wealth that give the, that give these jokers the ability to do what they're doing. You know, as Michael Perini said, the center is bled so the perimeter can expand. You know, our taxes fund the patricians and their desire for far off plunder. If we take away their material base, then they have no ability to expand. Is it going to solve things overnight? Absolutely not. You're talking about a Gordian knot of hundreds of years of trauma,
right,
you know, caused by a system. But it's a good, it's a step in the right direction, and that's where we should be headed. And we should not be listening to people who tell us for another year that we need to just blindly vote for the Democrats because they're not the Republicans. They're not offering us a way out. They're just not pointing at the same door
that
the Republicans are.
I appreciate what you had to say, and I appreciate your energy and for the ability you have to express yourself and affirming specific actions people can take. So thank you for doing work in the right direction and for being the change that we need. So thank you for your work, and let's hear, I hope to hear more about your work, and I hope you remain encouraged. And I also hope people heard that last part of your remark, is this is going to take work. It's going to take a while. And I like to say, whenever I hear people say like, oh, we could have to just bunker down until the next election, I said, I don't think it'll be settled in 2026. We have to prepare for a long, long, long term to work on this. So,
absolutely.
Hey, thank you for your call, and I hope all goes well with you. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we're speaking this morning about the loss of what we might have thought was the United States of America. Now, certainly many of us grew up with a certain vision of what this nation should be. Well, certainly the blinders are off our eyes. For many people, as I suspect a previous caller who probably had a less than idealistic view of the United States, of who we could be. But for any who wore glasses that did not see things clearly, I think what has happened, certainly in the United States over the last 9 months, has become very, very clear that we need a new way of looking. So what do we do now with the apparent brazen loss of free speech, government censorship, the FCC threat to taking away broadcast licenses? Are we headed to two separate nations? And how do we heal? Well, I toss out these questions, and I want to hear what you have to say. So let's hear what our next caller has to say in a minute. Oh, good morning, Edie. How are you this morning?
Hi, this is a different Edie than usually calls in, but I call in every now and again.
Okay, different Edie. How are you?
Yeah. What I have to say, and I'll be brief, I believe from the Kirk Memorial to so much that comes across the airwaves and TV viewing is that we have the delusion of glowing words, the feeling which many have when they have talked about a thing or approved of it, that in these things they believe they have actually done something.
Now, could you say that again?
We need to take note of the delusion of glowing words.
Delusion of, okay.
The feeling which many have when they have talked about a thing or approved of it, whether it's Christianity or what Jesus did on the cross or what democracy stands for, and that when they say these things, they believe they've actually done something.
Mm.
And so what I'm talking about basically is such people make up the cult of merely verbal Christianity or merely verbal democracy.
Mm.
And so to me, there's this fatal reluctance to expend energy, the tragic gap, if you will, between idea and deed.
Mm.
So what we need to do is to de-atrophy the atrophied nerves of action.
Oh, I love it.
I like what Santiago had to say about the Workers' Party.
Uh-huh.
Getting people to do more than participate in the cult of merely verbal Christianity or merely verbal democracy.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Get behind a party. No, let's get critical thinking going on that calls out these cults that are fraudulent.
Yeah.
You know, Christianity is at a loss because of it, and I'm a serious person of faith, Christian, but it's been very hard to deal with those who are inside the church or, you know, attending, but are part of the cult of merely verbal Christianity.
Right.
And this is true of politics.
Right.
So that's all I have.
Well, before you go, I want to ask you, you mentioned, I appreciate what you say, and I wrote it down. I like what you had to share. Could you say something about critical thinking? Because that's something that's lost, that's being abandoned. How do we re-engage in critical thinking?
Critical thinking is the job of every one of us to know who are the stakeholders in a given situation, to know what their advantages are and their disadvantages are. And by that, if you take water, who are the people who have property, water rights on a given property? Who are the people that the utility districts or the public services to provide water to the, you know, common community? Who gets to say how deep their wells can be drilled if it takes away the wells of the people who own the property rights? I mean, this is a very complex issue if you just look at water.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at all of the stakeholders on the issue of water, and only then Can you walk away with an informed position? That's what critical thinking is. And we've got to make sure we have all of those, you know, stakeholders named and what their advantages and disadvantages are on any issue, so that we can have clean water, so that everyone has access to water, clean water.
Right.
And so that's just an example, using water.
Yes.
But critical thinking means we can't just settle for the words that sound winsome to us. We have to dig a little deeper for the sake of our humanity, our common humanity.
Right.
And unfortunately, we live amongst those who don't care about anyone but their own and kith and kin. So, that's it.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and let's keep on digging deeper. Thank you so much,
Edie. Thank you for your work, too, dear.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
You as well. And you're listening to More Talk Radio, and that was Edie, and I believe Janet is next.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You have such amazing people that call in and so intelligent. And I was thinking about last time I talked to something I wanted to include, and I was going to jump in with that. But what she was talking about, Edie, I've got a little sciatica, and the stimulation from your repartee is extraordinary. Kind of brings me back to when I was teaching this interpersonal communication at OSU.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy that ran the department, he was so brilliant, and we had the subject of groupthink and force field analysis. And so how it happens over time that a change of opinion will rise up is very difficult, because like Edie, she's so bright, and Santiago is so bright, but there's people that are so stuck in programming. They would never take a second to actually recognize the validity of facts or anything like that. But the thing I wanted to weigh in on, well, the funny thing was up there at the little smoke shop, this little doobie, I don't really smoke them, but I trade them sometime, and it said Gary Payton on it, and he was in my class. But that was way back in the 80s. But also, I was always struggling to work in a single parent. I get a second job, and I teach in a school,
uh-huh.
and then I take a little side job in a treatment center
right.
to make a little extra money, because I was a specialist, and I could run a little school program, and the wealthy people would have their kids locked up.
Right.
And so there was this one boy that came in, and there was a skinhead. And then when he came in and he was partnered up in this little room with a black kid, it was the first time he had ever met any young black person his same age. And,
wow.
and the transformation that he went in, just one-on-one experiencing this young person that was just like him, he just became so honored.
Wow.
And wanted to do everything he could to make things wonderful, and their connection was huge.
That's amazing.
It kind of reminded me of this book I read, or a film of this Vietnam vet that went from Seattle to Vietnam, because when he was in the field, he found a journal. And the journal, he's saying, oh my God, this guy, I'm out trying to kill him, and he's just like me. So, I mean, the opportunity to get past the roadblocks to communication, generalizing, stereotyping, preconceptions, I think the opportunity for us to encourage other people that we're not on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
I got neighbors that are so, like, right-wing, nutty people.
Right.
Finally, somehow, you know, by just being friendly and chatting, and they will be thinking, well, Leonard Pelletier was saying, oh, those hippies really helped us out. The opportunity to just kind of take it down a notch and be friendly with people that you think are just totally morons, then there's some growth there. It takes patience. It takes endurance. It takes so much time. It's totally frustrating and weird, but I think, to me, that's the way to go, that we recognize that we're not so perfect in our own self, in all of ourselves. There's good and evil are connected, so we don't want to look at it as outside of ourselves. And to recognize it that way, to embrace it that way, I think is the way to go, ultimately. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for all those wise words that I hope people just just meditate on them. Thank you, Janet. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO. I'm Cecil, and next up is Ed, I believe. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I am well. How are you today?
Oh, you know, I'm doing good. I'm on my way to work, you know.
Okay, well.
But, so, I definitely want to chime out the three people that have really rung through to me today. Santiago. Gotta fight the power and fight with the power of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Lady two times ago that talked about critical thinking, because as I've mentioned before on here, that critical thinking is the utmost important thing in this world.
Yes.
And the last lady was just talking about people blindly doing what they're told.
Mm.
Because that's how the educational system was set up, to train us to be rats in the maze and to do what we're told and to ignore the facts. Mm. Rather than use our critical brain. And I want to thank you for having the conversation today, because it's important that we become aware of what is wrong and how to change it, and buy all the banned books we can.
Yes. Yes. Could you say a little bit more about, you know, the inability for us to... Well, say a little bit more, because you mentioned the last caller, a previous caller mentioned about critical thinking. This is something you brought up before as well. Is there something missing in our educational system which prevent the development of critical thinking skills, and which leads
to... Well, yeah,
go ahead.
We're taught to get in line, to follow single file, and to not question what we're being told in these educational systems. Until we get to college, there is no class on critical thinking, and there is no truth as to what our founding fathers said or how things were framed.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody says the system's broken, but it's not.
Mm.
It's exactly how it was designed.
All right. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, and I was going to say, and the Republicans have been working since JFK was assassinated to undo all the things that have been created for our world to become more prosperous for the people.
Mm-hmm.
They've been working slowly, diligently, putting people in place and getting our Supreme Court
packed, yeah.
Stacked, yes.
Yeah. Hey, yes. But, yeah.
And people just blindly follow. Oh, that's what they said. Well, no. See, the Supreme Court justices, the majority right now, are wrong, and they're unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And people allowing it to be what it is without stepping up and standing up and saying, no, it's not okay.
Right.
And like they said, I had a bunch of American flags down my street today. Oh, peace. And they're all God and church and God and church. And I'm like, no, separation of church and state. Thank you. You can keep your God.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts and for sharing and reminding us of the world we're living in and what we are called.
Remind your kids to think for themselves. To
think for yourselves.
And not to follow blindly.
Yeah, and you know, you made an observation that caused me to raise my eyebrow, observation that critical thinking skills are taught until you get to college, and I say, oh, well, there's something wrong with our education system.
I never had a critical thinking class until I got to college.
Wow. Okay.
It was right there with English,
mm-hmm.
having, what class was that, where you actually have to create a argumentative statement, phrases and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
You know? I can't remember. Anywho.
Well, thank you.
But thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Ed, for your thoughts. Have a good rest of your day. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. We've been speaking about the world we live in. And coming up next is Tangent. Good morning.
Brother Cecil and all my brothers and sisters out. Let me turn off the speaker.
Yeah.
All my brothers and sisters out in KBOO land. I want to say amen, hallelujah, And you tell it, brother, to Frederick Douglass, man. I've been thinking these things for so long. And that's why I had to stop going to church and keep just thinking about, I'm living in spirit, okay? The air is spirit, all right? That's what I look at. I'm breathing spirit. And I'm thinking my thinking is my praying. So I want to get into a couple of things that have been brought up. Well, first, let's go back to, because you mentioned Civil War, and I brought this up before, but mm-hmm. it was also called the War Between the States.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, it wasn't civilians fighting the war. It was soldiers, okay? But so what I'm getting at is now it looks like we're heading towards a war between the states. It's going to be Texas v. Illinois and California.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's one thought.
So what do you think?
I'll
mm-hmm. let you finish, yeah.
Okay, well, I just want to run down some terms, because we can talk about what we can do, but what we speak all the time is that when the last gentleman mentioned that we blindly do what we've been told. I'm saying that we blindly or deftly say what we've been told.
Mm.
So some of the terms that were just used, critical thinking, sounds great. Okay, we have complementary thinking, complementary angles. Okay, that's a math term, but critical, is that great? You know, I'm going back to this thing about struggling for peace. Struggling, work, okay? We're working for peace. We're working for the working party. We're working. Okay. And by the way, just on that working class and whatever, there's a hard working class, and then there's the soft, easy street working, if you call that working. But here, there's another one here called stereotyping. I say it's really more like monotyping, because if you gave them stereo, they'd have like two boxes to be in, left and right.
So What I think I'm hearing from you, and correct me when I'm wrong, is in terms of definition of language. We might throw out words, and we may have different meanings of them. So, critical thinking. What does that mean? You offered, well, critical contrasted with complementary thinking causes us to stop and say,
And not to pick, I'm not here to be the word police or anything. It's simply saying I'm word to be word.
Yeah.
And people will say, and so you just said, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, what does that say? What does that define? Mean is not a nice word. So I don't like to say, I mean. What I mean is, okay, it sounds like I'm mean. If it was, all right, anyway.
Okay.
Couple more. But okay, here's one. We say someone is wise and then call them a wizard. A cheese wizard, a math wizard. I will spell wise, W-H-Y apostrophe S. Why is?
Okay.
And when you ask why is, and I have an acronym for ask, basically, also, and that is as soon known.
Okay.
So as soon known. So when you ask, you can know. But if you don't ask and you assume and you've always, you get me? Yeah. Just think differently. Okay.
Well, thank you for affirming and reminding us to not only think differently, but to speak differently to question. So I appreciate your thoughts and your words and being such a very clever wordsmith. Thank you, Tangent. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station? Oh, okay. No, I thought I saw another caller. Okay, so we have a few minutes left. And let me remind you that you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Thank you all who have called this morning and shared your wisdom with us, from Santiago, who reminded us of the need to organize and recognize the work that he is doing by focusing on creating and building a workers' party. Edie, who shared with us the power of words and what we are called to do, talked about the delusion of glowing words and the need for critical thinking. And we thank you for Janet for reminding us of groupthink and the possibility that we can actually speak to our neighbors, our friends, from a different viewpoint and create something new. And also, thank you, Ed, for calling in, as well as Tangent, telling us about the words. Let's go to what may be our last caller, but we'll see. John, good morning, John.
Good morning, Cecil, and thank you for your long dedication to community and speaking the truth.
Thank you.
Well, you've enjoyed book recommendations in the past, so I'm going to give you one real quick.
Oh, please, yes.
I came across a book called The Disappearance of the Universe, and it's so interesting. I read it over again, maybe four times in a row. It has that much information in it. What it is this guy that wrote the book, and the reason I even picked it up and looked at it much was the back cover had Wayne Dyer recommending it highly. So he's passed away, but he's been somebody I've respected, so I looked at the book a bit and bought it and brought it home, and it's been really transformative to my understanding of history,
and the author,
Christian history.
I'm not sure. Did you say the author of this book? The name of the author?
Gary Renard, and I think he's coming out with his fourth book this fall.
Okay.
So I've only read his first book, but I'm anxious to read his other ones.
Okay. I'm going to put that on my to-do list.
I don't know if you've heard of the book A Course in Miracles. Marianne Williamson and other authors have recommended that book.
Okay.
That book has not spawned a new religion, but there are study groups all over the world that study it because they believe it may be the best way to find enlightenment. That's what the book says. And The Disappearance of the Universe is a... So, A Course in Miracles came out in 1976, I believe.
Yes.
And The Disappearance of the Universe came out in, I believe, 2003, maybe.
Okay.
And then Hay, it's the publisher was Wayne Dyer, being very connected to.
Okay. Okay, we're running short on time, but we do got those two books that you recommended.
Yeah, Hay House Books they publish spiritual.
Okay.
Books, and thank you. I've read a bunch of those.
Okay, thank you so much. Sorry to cut you off, but we're almost out of time, but we'd like to get to John. Jeff, you have the last word.
Good morning, Cecil. Thanks for taking my call. I hope you're well. And the sickness is real. The sickness is real in everyone. And the illness that we all suffer from, no matter what position we take on a political spectrum, is called materialism.
Mm.
And until each of us can come away from the materialism that eats away at our soul, we will be getting nowhere quickly.
Mm.
What's mine is mine. What is mine is mine. We all say it. And 8 billion organisms, all demanding more and more and more. The consumerism that infects, frankly, the whole world, will kill the whole world. And the way to heal that is to stop being such consumers.
Thank you, Jeff. I was holding my breath because you were going down. I would say, oh, no. And then you ended up with the way to heal it. So it's good to give an analysis, but also to offer a solution if there is one. Not to say that we have to pretend there is one, but also I think just being realistic about who we are and what we can do. We are living. Thank you all for calling and for participating, and more importantly, for caring. It is important to continue to care. There is so much going on that seems to want to keep us from being who we are called to be. And I think if we allow that to happen, We are defeated before we need to be defeated. There's so much work to do. And as the caller shared this morning, there are so many ways we can build a better world. So do not be discouraged. Be like Santiago and Edie and Janet and Ed and Tangent and John and Jeff. Making a difference in your world, making a difference in your community, because all of us, no matter who we are or where we are, we can make a difference. We may think it's large, we may think it's small, but you are created to make a difference. In the past, in his remarks, Jeff mentioned something, I think, I forget the exact phrase he used, but he said 8 billion. I don't know, people. I'll say 8 billion people. And you are one of them, and you can make a difference. You are making a difference, and we can create a world that we would like. Let's continue to do the work, be encouraged, continue to strengthen and build community, and spread joy and love and healing and hope to all. I'm Cecil Prescott. You have been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I will speak with you next time. Take care.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.